Well, here comes Tim Hirsch. Okay. But go ahead and start. It's 5:30.
Good evening.
We're just getting started.
Is the little switch on?
Yeah. Okay. Good evening. My name is Tom Donahue. I am the chair of the board of directors. Welcome to the Master Water and Wastewater Sewer Plan meeting. This is something we do by law every 20 years. To point out what our future priorities are. This is a public meeting, so we are looking for input to what our priorities are, may not necessarily be yours. So to get started here, this is John Wesley, our authority manager. Welcome, and John, it's all yours.
Well, thank you, Tom. So, as Tom said, our water and wastewater master plans, I tell you what, Tom, let's go to the next, the first slide.
I'm gonna find your...
There you go. So, what is a master plan? So, a master plan is a written document that evaluates the needs of community water and wastewater systems for a 20-year period. So, it's a look-ahead type of document. They are required by law for community water systems with 300 or more connections. That certainly includes us. And what these plans do is they identify system deficiencies and future needs based on current conditions, current infrastructure conditions, current system capacity, and future growth. Once they do that analysis, the plan recommends capital improvements to correct the identified deficiencies, and it develops a prioritized implementation schedule of the improvements along with estimated costs. There's also a section of the plans that review financing options. These capital improvement projects, of course, they cost money, and they have to be funded. And there's a variety of ways that can occur. That can occur through just general revenue. It can occur through bonds, like GO bonds. It can in addition to GO bonds, there's also, looking at potentially raising rates if necessary. But it does try to put together options for how to fund the plans that have been identified as being needed over the next 20 years. Next slide, Tom. So we'll start with our water master plan. The water master plan is covers the period 2020 to 2040. And start with the major water system components. These are things like our water treatment plant, our water reservoirs, our water storage. So we've got membrane microfiltration water treatment plant, 12-inch Horn Creek transmission line. It's over 1,700 feet long. We have 6 groundwater wells, 3 water storage reservoirs. We've got 100K, we've got a 300K, we've got a 600K, and those names represent the approximate capacity of those reservoirs. So a 600K reservoir, that's 600,000 gallons. We have 2 booster pump stations, one located at the 300K, one located at the 100K. The 100K serves the areas that the reservoir on the north side of town covers. The 300K is probably one of our most important pieces of infrastructure. The booster pump station there feeds the 600K. So water from the 300K gets pumped to the 600K as needed. We have 7 pressure regulating stations and 25 miles of distribution system piping 2-inch to 12-inch. So when you put together these plans, you have to evaluate your current water demands and compare them to future water demands. And that tells you what you need to do in order to accommodate future growth. So currently we have about 1,430 service connections. The production flow meters at the water treatment plant and at the wells were used as the basis for the calculations in the plan. The current average daily water demand is approximately 255,000 gallons per day. And the current average water demand per service is 178 gallons per day. That means that each and every service, on average, has 178 gallon per day demand associated with that. Commercial water user accounts for about 12% of total water produced for our commercial customers. The rest is residential customers. We don't really have any industrial customers left. As I think most people who live in Pacific City know, that water demands can fluctuate a great deal. A lot of the fluctuation comes from the tourists, seasonal, from tourists, and from vacation homes. Not surprising, the highest water use is during the month of July. Lowest water use is in the month of February. So here's our projected, based off of the growth models. We used historical records to review and evaluate, help predict growth, predict future demands. One of the things that you calculate as a baseline when you do this is the population at build-out. And for those that don't know what build-out means, that means every buildable tax lot in our service area now has a home. There's no room for any future expansion. Build-out is estimated to be at 2,500 connections, so we still got quite a ways to go. The models in the plan predict that we'll be at build-out in just under 100 years from now, so still got quite a ways to go. A 0.8% annual increase in service connections was used to project future water demands. A review of our historical records indicate that that is about what we should expect every year in terms of a percentage increase in water connections. Water service connections are expected to increase from 1,430 to 1,677 by 2040. And remember, 2040, this is a 20-year plan, 2020 to 2040. Average daily water demand is expected to increase from 255,089 gallons per day to almost 300,000 gallons per day by 2040. So those are the growth projections, and that's going to be one of the challenges for the utility over the next 20 years, is to be sure that we can meet future growth. So one of the things you do in these plans is you look at your current systems, you look at your current infrastructure, and you look for deficiencies. Now, deficiencies could be an old piece of equipment or a facility that just needs to be replaced, or it can be something that's undersized for future growth. So, there's a variety of things we're looking at here. So water storage facilities, and as I mentioned, the 100K, the 300K, the 600K, should be adequately sized to accomplish three things. You want to equalize peak demands, you want to provide sufficient volume for firefighting, and you want to provide an emergency reserve of water, just in case something happens to our water source, or something happens to our transmission main, or something happens to our treatment plant. It's important to have that emergency reserve of water. One of the things about the 100K reservoir, and this is the one on the north side of town, right? That reservoir is old. It's showing heavy signs of wear. And one of the problems fundamentally with the 100K reservoir is it does not have sufficient volume to provide the fire flows in that part of town. And that's a problem. That's something we got to look at. Also, the 100K, 300K, and 600K water storage reservoirs need repair and rehabilitation. You know, we've got corrosion on ladders, hatches, brackets that hold our floats. But you've also got some cracking of the concrete. We're talking about the walls, the ceilings, the floors, and those things have to be repaired. So one of the things that the master plan shows, the water master plan, is that by 2040, we don't have enough water storage. We're going to need at least 30,000 gallons more to meet our goals. So that's something that we have to try to account for and plan for during this next 20 years. So deficiencies currently with the distribution system, and this is a big one, 30% of the distribution system is 2-inch pipe. And the problem with 2-inch pipe is it restricts fire flows and doesn't provide really the pressures we'd like to see. And a big part of the water master plan, a big part of our list of projects, a big part of our projected cost estimates is going to be simply replacing these small diameter pipelines in our system. We have to replace those with bigger diameter pipes so we can get those fire flows and we don't have any pressure problems. Another problem is there are dead-end water mains in town that should be looped to help maintain service reliability and disinfection concentrations. When you have a dead-end line, water's not flowing through and coming around and rejoining other parts of our distribution system. So those dead-end lines should be looped, and that will take some work. Also, significant portions of the system do not have fire hydrants, and that's a problem as well. So that's something we have to address. One thing to mention as well is some parts of our distribution system were installed before current standards, and we have some asbestos cement pipe out there. Right? We have some inadequately restrained joints, and those are things that eventually have to be addressed or they'll come back to haunt us. Now, one thing I want to mention about the asbestos cement pipe, the reason we want to replace that is not because there's some health hazard related to it. The reason we want to replace that is AC pipe over time gets brittle, and when pipes get brittle, they break. And when an AC line breaks, we have to cut into it, and that's when you put people in danger because you're cutting into the pipe and those asbestos fibers become airborne, and that's the problem. That's why we want to replace that AC pipe. It's not because there's any health hazard associated with it. Did you have a question?
Is most of the 2 inches of the asbestos pipe?
No, the asbestos pipe is bigger. The 2-inch stuff is mostly plastic. So,
previous slide, you were talking about water usage. Do you have an estimate of loss of leaks?
Of water loss? Well, last month it was about 12.5%.
That's substantial.
Which is substantial, but it's not bad. It's quite a bit better than it's been. So, we're.
So, that you're thinking that 2 inch in that order?
I think a lot of it's probably coming from 2-inch lines, but I also think that, you know, doesn't matter what diameter the line is, you know, you're going to eventually have leaks. And the 2-inch line, the reason we're replacing it is not because we're worried about the integrity of the line. It's just we know the line's undersized. And that's the main reason to go after those. So another deficiency, and we did fix this, is The service connection water meters typically register lower than the water supply meters. And one of the things in our master plan was to replace all of our manual read water meters with new radio read water meters. And that's listed as a goal in the master plan. We've already done that. So there are things in the master plans that we have already accomplished, and that's one of them. So system deficiencies related to pumping. The 100K reservoir does not provide sufficient fire flow capacity or water pressure to the higher elevations on the north side of town. I'm talking about primarily Ridge Road. So that's a problem that we have to address. Also, the 300K reservoir booster pumps are somewhat undersized. We use those pumps to fill our 600K reservoir, and it can take a long time to fill that reservoir. If we had bigger pumps, we could fill that reservoir more quickly and restore our water storage faster. The 300K reservoir booster pumps and the spit wells do not have adequate backup emergency power. We do have a method for providing emergency power to those locations, but it consists of hooking up a mobile generator at the shop, driving it to these locations, and then connecting the generator once we get there. And these are manual transfer switches. We don't have full-time generators there, so we don't have auto transfer switches, which transfer as soon as power is lost, and then you maintain that continuity of operation. The way it is now is power's out and those pumps don't run until we can get up there with a mobile generator, and we can do better than that. And that's why this is an item on the master plan. So one of the required elements, and this is fairly new, one of the required elements of water master plans is you have to do a seismic resiliency analysis if you are a community that will be likely impacted by a Cascadia subduction zone event, which obviously means us. So we were required to do a seismic resiliency analysis as part of the water master plan. And so what this does is the key system components were identified and evaluated based on risk categories and seismic performance objectives that were developed by the state of Oregon. So they've got these objectives and these standards, and this scored our system's seismic resiliency against those standards. And not surprisingly, the analysis revealed numerous structural and non-structural seismic deficiencies with our system. Now, this becomes something that now we really need to focus on and address as a water system through the master plan. The master plan identifies 7 individual seismic upgrade projects over the next 20 years, ranging from seismic upgrades on the pipelines that span the river, whether it's Beachy Bridge, the Woods Bridge, also just structurally. Structurally, some of our older buildings and reservoirs, for example, are not built to withstand something like that. And personally, I think, you know, a Cascadia subduction zone event, it's pretty hard to plan for, almost impossible to prepare for, but at least that this is a, making this a requirement in the master plans at least gets people thinking about that. So, okay. So, you know, this is kind of the bread and butter of the master plan. This is why we do it. We come up with a list of future needs. So, top one on the list, replace all 2-inch water mains with larger diameter pipes. That's going to account for, I didn't do the math, but I'm guessing a third of our improvement projects identified in the Water Master Plan, and a third of the cost. So this goal alone significant in terms of cost and effort. The plan also calls for replacing the 100K water storage reservoir with a new 150K water storage reservoir. Now, you saw in a couple of previous slides that we're 20 years from now, we're not going to have enough water storage. So this is a method to not only decommission an old, worn-out reservoir, but it's a method to also increase the amount of water storage. Now, this is one area I disagree with the master plans, is that if we're going to go to the trouble of building a new reservoir, it's not going to be 150. It's going to be more like a 250, because we don't want to just make it to the end of the 20-year period. When you build a reservoir like this, you shouldn't expect to get about 50 years worth of life out of it, right? So I can't see going to this much trouble just to expand our storage by 50,000. If we're going to do it, we need to make it worthwhile. And, 200,000, 250,000 is likely what would make the most sense at that point. We need to install a fire pump at the 100K booster pump station. This is what's needed to provide the pressures and the fire flows to Ridge Road and to those higher elevations on the north side of town. Here, I mentioned we've already done this, replace all service connection water meters with radio read meters, repair and rehabilitate the 100K, 300K, and 600K water storage reservoirs. Those are the cracks and the corrosion we need to take care of. You know, we'll probably start with the 300K and 600K because if we're potentially going to replace the 100K sometime soon, we probably aren't looking to sink a lot of money into fixing it up. But we do need it to be functional and to work as long as we need it to. So it's going to need a little attention. Provide emergency power generators and automatic transfer switches to the 300K and the spit wells. By the way, the spit wells are our well field down by Bogstrop State Park. Our dune well field is the one over on the BLM property just north of the treatment facility. Here's something of interest. Increase the capacity of the Horn Creek Water Treatment Plant to permit certification of water rights. Well, that's a pretty expensive proposition, and since this was written, it's come to my attention that we've got a development limitation on our water permit. So until we can demonstrate that we need that much water, the Oregon Water Resources Department is not going to allow us to certify more than we currently need. So this is something that will need to happen in the future, but it doesn't need to happen now. The current capacity of Horn Creek is fine. It's going to be adequate for the foreseeable future, and purpose for doing so, just to certify our water rights, is really not on the table. So it's not a consideration. Also, as we said, provide system-wide seismic upgrades, including structural, non-structural improvements to buildings, reservoirs, and pipelines. So this is our list of things that we need going forward.
So John, that looks like a whole big amount of money. Where's that money going to come from?
That's in there. We'll talk about that in a couple slides.
Okay.
So the water capital improvement plan. So these plans identify all these needs, and then it comes up with a CIP, a capital improvement plan. The capital improvement plan they put together is prioritized, and it also has cost estimates. The water master plan lists 15 facility upgrades, 34 piping system upgrades, a big portion is chasing these 2-inch lines, and 7 seismic resiliency upgrades were recommended for completion during the next 20 years. Look at that price tag. We're not going to be able to get all these done. I mean, that's out of reach. Even if we found creative financing options, even if we went after general obligation bonds or if we applied for grants, we're not going to be able to touch that. And the reality of it is, and let's go ahead and go to the next slide, Tom. The reality of it is, oh, the one above it, I'm sorry. So, oh, that, I'm sorry, that was the last. So the thing about it is that there's going to be a lot of the projects listed in the Water Master Plan that are just going to have to be deferred. Because there's no way we can do it. Even if we could afford it, even if we had the financing, we wouldn't be able to manage that many projects. I mean, we just wouldn't be able to do it. So we're going to prioritize the projects in the list. We're going to do as many as we can. We're already underway with at least three or four of them. But that's a price tag that is going to be very difficult to deal with. And as we get into the wastewater master plans, I'd like everybody to pay attention to the difference between the water master plan and its projected needs and the wastewater master plan and its projected needs, because there's a big difference. So that's about all of it for the water master plan. We've got, we still have to talk about the wastewater master plan. Is there any questions? Anybody have any thoughts, any comments, any questions at all about the information we presented so far? Yes, Gary.
What volume do you believe that the North Reservoir would need to have in order to, just from its own gravity effect, supply fire hose pressures?
Well, I don't think it. Its elevation would help, you know, obviously, because the higher the water is, the more elevation ahead it is, the more pressure it exerts. But we got a unique problem on the north side of town, and that ridge road is, you know, at the minimum pressure, and the places lower, the pressure grows rather quickly. I mean, if you just get a little further down Cape Kiwanda Drive, now this is not part of the 100K system, but within a few blocks, we've got 80 PSI in some of those lines. But the problem is Ridge Road, we're lucky to get 23 PSI, and we're required to provide 20. Now, a taller reservoir might work, but there's a reason that reservoir is not already taller. And I'm not sure what the hydraulic analysis at the time revealed, but I think it's going to be more complicated than simply elevating the water to gain pressure. We got more going on there than that. And knowing we have to replace that reservoir anyway, and you can't take the reservoir out of service to build a new one in its place. So we're going to have to relocate the other one just so that continuity of operations while the other one's getting built. And the location of that has yet to be determined. One of the requirements or one of the desires of our engineers is wherever that's located, it's located at the exact same elevation as the 300K, so that those can draft together and we can maintain our current pressure zones within the system. So you gotta find something high enough that will also serve this, but will work with the rest of the system. And there's talk about the BLM property being a potential site for something like that, but it's yet to be determined. There's a lot of factors to consider, but I think if it was just a matter of replacing the ground level reservoir with like a elevated tank, we would have already done it by now. And so there's more going on there than just that, but I'm not 100% sure exactly what the hydraulic considerations are. So, any other questions about the water master plan? All right, well, Tom, let's get into the wastewater master plan. So the wastewater master plan, the time frame's a tad bit different. So the water master plan is from 2020 to 2040. The wastewater master plan is from 2022 to 2042, and I'm not sure how that difference came about, but it might have something to do with a previous plan being updated at some point in its history. And but it does seem a little strange that they're different by 2 years, but that's just the way they are. And these were the time frames related to these were so that we don't have a gap between a previous plan that expired and a new plan. And so that's the goal. You want to, every 20 years, you want to come up with a new plan looking ahead without any lapses in those plans. So just like the water master plan, listing, you know, our key components, this time on the wastewater side. So we've got a sequencing batch reactor wastewater treatment plant. It's 2 million gallons per day, and I believe that's peak day. Everything I've seen rates it as a 2 million gallon per day plant. A big part of our wastewater treatment is solids handling. We've got aerobic digesters that treat the solids. Then we use a screw press to dewater it, and then we land apply those biosolids to a 50-acre field that is owned by the authority near Beaver. So a key part of our system is our sewer lift stations. We have 10 duplex sewer lift stations. Duplex means two submersible pumps each. And actually, I said 10 because that's what the master plan says. We actually have 11 counting the lift station, the in-plant lift station makes 11. We have, at the time of the plan, 126 septic tank effluent pumping systems. I think we've got a few more now. For those that don't know what those are individualized sewer septic tanks. The difference between a step system and a traditional septic tank is you're not doing any treatment on site. You're just storing and pumping it into the sewer force main and sending it to the treatment plant for treatment. So there's no leach fields. There's none of that with these types of systems. These systems, although they're individual for individual homes, they're completely owned and maintained by the authority. Collection system piping, it's about 70% gravity, about 30% pressure. 7,800 feet of gravity sewer line, 6-inch to 15-inch, and approximately 33,000 feet of pressure sewer pipeline, 1.5 inch to 8-inch. Pressure sewer pipelines are generally smaller in diameter. The 8-inch is the big line from the airport lift station to the treatment plant. And we need a big line there. That lift station handles a lot of flow. Tom? So I wanted to talk a little bit about inflow and infiltration, because wastewater systems spend a considerable amount of their time and money chasing this problem and trying to minimize this problem. So inflow and infiltration are terms for the way that stormwater, which is the inflow piece, and groundwater, which is the infiltration piece, make their way into sanitary sewer pipes. So there could be a number of things that could cause that. Maybe you've got a crack in a pipe or a separated joint. Groundwater rises, it can work its way into those pipes. INI is a common problem. It's a problem for every wastewater treatment system. But it is a problem because it increases your pumping and treatment costs, and if excessive, can overload your system. So, and for PCJ, these problems become amplified for us during Nestucca River flooding events, because what happens then is where the river floods is where we have most of our step systems, right? So If we have any step system access lids that aren't seated properly, well, you know what happens when those sites become inundated with river water? That water is going to find its way into those step systems and eventually find their way into the treatment plant. Also, manhole lids that are not watertight, especially manhole lids that are located in the Mistuka River floodway, that's another source of these problems. Our records indicate that during those significant Mistuka River flooding events, flow to the treatment plant can increase by 250,000 gallons just from that INI. So you guys can see the problem. And if it was just rainwater and puddles, that's one thing. But we've got more than that to deal with. We've got a river that floods its banks, what, 3 to 4 times a year?
Just to put that number in perspective, what percentage increase would that be above normal?
Well, I'll be able to tell you that with the next slide because it tells me what the normal flow is, but that's significantly higher. That's probably twice as high as normal flow, even in the wintertime. Let's see. Tell you what, Tom, can you go back to the INI one? I just want to, let's see. Yep, we're good. Okay, let's move forward. So again, we need to determine current conditions for flow, number of connections. On the wastewater side, you've got this concept called loads, which is the organic loading to the treatment plant. You have more people, you're going to get more loading at the treatment plant, right? And that increases costs and other operational issues. So we've got approximately 1,438 sewer service connections. So when they're doing these studies, they're always, you know, there's these engineering parameters that, with these long acronyms that, you know, they're talking about, like average daily demand or peak instantaneous flow, or in this case, maximum month dry weather flow. And the only reason I bring that up is this value is what the industry uses to calculate the wastewater flows and loadings. That's the value they look at. They don't look at the average flow into the treatment plant. They look at what is the average flow during the maximum month dry weather flow. Dry weather, so that's going to be May to October, that period of time. So the current maximum month dry weather flow, 214,000 gallons, Gary. So that's less than just the amount contributed by the INI for flooding events alone. So 214,000 gallons per day, that's coming in, that's wastewater flow coming into the treatment plant. The current per connection wastewater flow rate is 148.7 gallons a day. Every sewer connection, on average, sends that much flow to the wastewater treatment plant.
It's kind of interesting because the daily consumption was 178 from the water system. So where's that third? There's 30 gallons of people drinking it and taking it somewhere else. I just wonder.
It could be a number of things to where, you know, it's like you say, you know, washing boats, cars, that water is just going to evaporate away.
It's interesting that there's a 30 gallon. That's significant.
Yeah, it is. And I didn't make that connection and compare those two, but it's an interesting comparison.
It's a lot of jello.
A lot of jello.
So, in the middle of this, I had to throw in something just to clarify the bottom two entries. So we have to talk about two types of loadings, organic and solids loadings to the wastewater treatment plant. These are measured using two kinds of tests, two kinds of concepts. So biochemical oxygen demand That is a measure of the organic loading in the treatment plant. Total suspended solids is a measure of the solids, whether they're organic, inorganic, or whatever, that come into the treatment plant. So it had to kind of define these because, remember, a big part of the wastewater consideration is loading at the treatment plant, right? So the current, and here's this maximum month dry weather flow again, the current MMDWF plant loadings are 474 pounds per day of BOD and 828 pounds per day of total suspended solids. So these parameters are typically represented as pounds per day. The current per connection loadings, this is for every sewer connection, what is its loading, individual loading into the system, the treatment plant, 0.33 pounds per day of BOD and 0.58 pounds per day of total suspended solids.
Does our system have a problem with those flushable wipes like you see in other cities and whatnot plugging up the system? Do we have that problem here too?
We do have that problem, and where it really becomes pronounced is when people flush a lot of those into one of those step systems I was talking about, because it completely clogs the tank and the pump with these flushable wipes, which is, so they are a problem. And I think people are starting to realize that these things don't really degrade like toilet paper, and they probably shouldn't be flushing these things down. You know, we used to have problems at our lift stations with the pumps getting bound up on rags, what we call rags. In our industry, rags is a term for all the paper products you find in wastewater, right? And we now have better pumps that can handle that and chew it up in most of our systems. But, you know, historically, we've had to pull a lot of lift station pumps just to pull a rag out of the impeller. And so, yes, they are problems. And, you know, flushable, the word flushable before anything is problematic for guys like me who spend a career trying to unclog things that those clog up. So, okay, so this is what we project. You know, we talked about what we currently have. This is what we project for connection flows and loads. So, again, just a quick blurb about build out being 2,500 for the, just like for the water master plan, 0.8% annual increase in service connections was used to project future growth and water demands. Where we got that number is we took how many service connections were added per year for the last 25 years, and we found that average or that trend, and we feel like that number is representative. Sewer service connections, the connections, expected to increase from 1,438 to 1,689 by 2042. The MMDWF, again, there's that acronym, is expected to increase from 214,000 gallons per day to 251,000 gallons per day by 2042. This is the flow coming into the treatment plant. Plant loadings for BOD expected to increase from 474 pounds to 557 pounds per day by 2042. And the total suspended solids increased from 828 pounds per day to 973 pounds per day. So when you're talking about wastewater, you know, it's not just the flows that you have to account for. You have to account for the increase in the loading at the treatment plant. And both of those factors are important. The higher the loadings, the more money it costs us to treat, right? And our treatment plant, although we're far from it, is rated for a maximum BOD and total suspended solids. So, you know, but treatment plant won't have any issue. We're good there. But the point being is all these things increase costs. and potentially require us to upsize facilities to account for it. So all of these, this represents a 15% increase in service connections, wastewater flows, and treatment plant loadings over the next 20 years. And that's significant. So, deficiencies with the current system. As I said, inflow and infiltration of the collection system, especially during flooding events, is a primary concern. It's something that we have to try to mitigate. Our lift station pumps have exceeded their useful life and need new control panels with updated electrical components. We were already in the process of doing that. In fact, we upgraded two lift stations about a year ago. We're scheduled to upgrade two more. We've got the parts in maybe a month or less than 2 months, and then we've got several more to go before we get them all. But this is something that we've already started. Some of the lift stations do not have remote telemetry to monitor and report operating problems. So we rely, these stations are kind of scattered around. So you need radio telemetry units for those in order to send alarms about high wet wells or pump failures or other types of things. And some of our lift stations doesn't have that. And that leaves us, that puts us in jeopardy. It leaves us vulnerable to problems because, worst case scenario, we have two pumps go out. We got nothing there to alarm us to the fact we have two pumps go out. Now the wet well gets full and overflows under the ground. We have nothing to alert us about that. This is important stuff. We got to get that these telemetry systems at those locations.
Just for my edification, which bridge? Which is the slough bridge?
Well, it's the one on the south side of town on South Broughton. As you're coming into town, it's just on this side of Nesteca Manor. Yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah, that's all right. That's what we generally call the slough bridge. I don't know if that's typically what it's other people call it.
I was just wondering what that was.
Step systems that pump directly into the Woods lift station force main do not have sufficient discharge pressure to pump when the Woods lift station is operating. And that becomes a bigger problem during those flooding events I was talking about. we've got a lot of these step systems along resort and in that part of town. Long term beyond this 20-year look ahead with this plan, I think it would be wise to consider installing another lift station in that part of town and eliminating some of these step systems. Step systems, they're high maintenance, and as we've already said, they're a primary source of INI. Just the river inundating the system, leaking into these step systems, and then finding their way to the treatment plant. The 8-inch PVC sewer main that crosses the slough bridge could be undersized. It's not going to be undersized in the next 20 years, but it could be undersized at some point beyond that once we get more development on that side of town and perhaps in the Heights, although I'm not sure what more development is needed. I will say, though, that in general, that our gravity system has the capacity for the next 20 years. So we don't need to upsize the gravity system. What we do need to do is we need to do more video inspections of the gravity pipes just to make sure that they're all in good condition. I mentioned, all the pipes on the water side that we need to replace just because they're undersized. That's not even considering what condition they're in. We're replacing those simply because we know they're undersized. In this case, because it hasn't been that long since we've had a closed circuit television system that can inspect these sewers, we've got to do more of these sewer inspections because we may need more in the way of collection system piping than we even know at this point. So we gotta look at those and assess their condition. We don't have any reason to suspect anything other than the fact that we do have INI, and INI doesn't just occur when the river floods. That's when it really gets bad. Anytime it rains, we get stormwater into the treatment plant, and that's coming from somewhere. And these TV inspections will help us find those locations. So, future system needs on the wastewater side. Install and inspect watertight manhole covers on all manholes located within the Nestucca River floodway. So we've got to, if we want to, make sure that we keep river water during floods out of our system, we got to make sure those manhole covers are leak tight. And currently, we can't say that. I know we've got some of them that are leak tight or leak tight rated, and some that aren't. But even the ones that are rated for being leak tight, they need to be inspected and maybe have the gaskets replaced and other types of maintenance. So that's one thing we got to do. We've got a faulty, a non-functional flow meter at the airport lift station. Airport is our primary lift station. The flow meter there provides useful measurements to us so that we can gauge sewer flows not only into the treatment plant directly from the airport lift station, but in other parts of our system. That job is going to be scheduled very soon, right, Leonard? So we've got the new flow meter. We just got to get it put in. Here, they replace the pumps, electrical panels, and control systems. Here's the lift stations we still have to do. Cindy, Roger, Beachy, and Madrona lift stations. So we've done Kiwanda. We've done Straub. We've got these four left to do. And so Straub's done. Straub's not listed. So yeah, this list is right. The telemetry units we need Woods doesn't have one, Roger, Cindy, Straub now has one. Hannah doesn't have telemetry? That's crazy. Okay, we got to fix that. Provide seismic upgrades on river crossing pipelines on the Slough Bridge, Woods Bridge, and Beachy Bridge. And the needs here are probably mainly the two smaller ones. There actually is some pretty good seismic components, seismic resiliency rated components that have been installed on the Beachy Bridge. The two smaller bridges, not so much. There are some things that we can do there to bolster those protections. Wanted to mention, so no mention of anything at the wastewater treatment plant in the master plan. Wastewater treatment facility has gone through significant upgrades in recent years, so no upgrades recommended there. So that's a good thing. It's mainly just the other parts of the system. So here's the water capital improvement plan that was developed from these assessments. Master plan recommends 10 wastewater system improvements, and look at the cost of these. So compare the water side to the wastewater side. We've only got 10 projects, only estimated $716,000. We can afford to do that. Nothing's going to stop us. We're already working on it. There's nothing in this master plan that we can't accomplish with our own existing funds. Now, 716 compared to 37 million on the water side, right? And I believe it was 56 projects on the water side and 10 here. So a pretty stark difference between the two systems. So here's the financial analysis. One thing to note, 3% annual increase was assumed for expenses and system development charge increases. As I said, PCJ has the funding needed to finance those projects. No problem there. Just one thing that was said in the master plan I kind of like. PCJWSA has invested heavily in its wastewater system over the past 10 years to address most of the deficiencies identified in previous plans. That's one reason that we aren't so far behind the eight ball on the wastewater side, right? And again, what I mentioned about the sewer pipeline inspections is something that is going to be key for us to truly provide a quality assessment of our collection system. So, key takeaways, and this, to me, this is the glaring difference. Key takeaways between the two plans: 56 capital improvement projects recommended on the water side, 10 on the wastewater side, $37,075,000 versus only less than $750,000. And as we say here, this one's a slam dunk. This one, we're going to have to make choices. And I want to say that these master plans, they're a guide. They're not, you, thou shalt do this. Over 20 years, it's not uncommon for new projects to pop up that weren't even considered when the plan was written, and for projects to fall off, like I mentioned, the wastewater or the water treatment plant capacity upgrade. It's not necessary, and it wouldn't even help us achieve our goals right now. So, but one of the reasons we wanted to discuss this with the public is so that the public understands what our challenges are, right? I mean, this is really your water and wastewater system. You know, we're financed almost completely by dollars through system development charges and user rates for people like you who live here and use the water and sewer systems. If we've got challenges, whether they're compliance challenges, financing challenges, it's important for us to communicate to that to the public, because we need everybody to understand what those are, and that way, you know, if there comes a time where we have to increase water rates to help fund these or other types of things, hopefully people understand why. You know, it's we've got a system that we need to maintain well into the future, and that takes time, that takes resources, and you know, it's just, you know, we want to be open and upfront with our customers and our community about what these challenges are and what it's going to take to overcome them. So,
have you set a priority list for each of these? You know, what's number one for the water and what's number one through five or something?
We have. And by the way, I'll address your question here in a second. We do have hard copies of our water and wastewater plans that go into a lot more detail than I could present tonight. And I've made enough copies, I think, for everybody here. I mean, five copies of the water plan, five copies of the wastewater plan, and in those plans it goes into more detail. But this CIP, this capital improvement project list of priorities, this 56 and this 10. So they are in prioritized list. And again, that can change, but at the time, you know, for example, I'll just read you our top five priorities on the water side, and then I'll read you our top five on the wastewater side. And this was really too much to put in a PowerPoint, so you know, they are available in these systems. So the top five priorities, well, the water side is broken into facilities, pipe, and seismic upgrades. So Standby power for the 300K and the spilt walls is priority number one on the water master plan for facilities. Priority number two and three is the tank rehabilitation at the 300K and the 600K reservoirs. And then we've got security upgrades at the 100K reservoir. We've got some things we got to do there security-wise, and SCADA upgrades as well. So that's one through five on the facilities list. The pipe upgrades are going to be mainly replacing undersized water lines, those 2-inch water lines. Although the water meter replacement was priority number one, that's already been done. Guess what's priority number two? Ruppel pipeline. Ferry Street is the I believe the Ferry Street, where the Ferry Street crossing is to replace that 2-inch pipeline.
It's the Ferry Street by the
river. Oh, is it? So it's the other Ferry Street. So and they're just, you know, kind of more of that. You know, a good chunk of these is just upsizing our system. So those are on the pipe upgrades, seismic upgrades, upgrade the reservoirs. There are connections, pipe connections going in and out of the reservoirs that are rigid. They're not flexible, so that they're likely going to break in the event of an earthquake. Here's a big expense, what they call the backbone pipe system in our water system. And what the backbone pipe system is the main, our major transmission line artery from Horn Creek to the 300K reservoir, through town, across Beachy Bridge, up Kiwanda. That system is not seismically rated at all. And this plan discusses the need to replace all those pipelines, or the joints on the pipelines with restrained joints, which a lot of them don't have. So that's on the water side. And just to give you an idea, and they're listed in priority one through, pretty much 1 through 56. They're just broken into three categories. So the listing on the wastewater side, and I've got it here. So priority number one, watertight manhole covers. I mean, that's pretty low-hanging fruit, right? That's not really complex stuff. We can do that. Replace the airport flow meter, number two. Lift station upgrades, the panels, the new pumps, number three. I&I inspections, which is that TV, those TV inspections, priority number four. And priority number five is the remote telemetry units at the lift stations, the satellite lift stations that don't currently have it. So, but the capital improvement project list is listed in priority order. So if you're looking at these, and I recommend everybody try to grab a copy of each plan as you leave, you can get in there and you can see the details of which projects we're doing in what order. You can see the estimated cost. And there's even, in most cases, a brief explanation as to why that individual project is important. So, so that's really it. Looking at the time, we're well ahead of schedule. Any questions at all about any of the things we've discussed, Gary?
So recognizing that the wastewater seems much more possible to proceed with the plans than the water, I do have a question about the wastewater. When I&I does happen, how would you describe the actual impact on the infrastructure? Is it affect the longevity of the equipment, or is it a purely capacity issue, or how would you characterize it?
Well, it's going to have several impacts. The first impact is our lift stations have to work harder to pump that much extra water.
Okay.
And that creates more wear and tear on the pumps, shortens the life of the pumps, increases maintenance and repair costs for those types of pieces of equipment. Also, the treatment plant. We get we get hydraulic surges into the treatment plant that throws us into high flow mode, which is a way the treatment plant operates when it experiences high flow. But the treatment plant is able to absorb it, but not without a cost. Because once you mix river water with sewage, it all has to be treated. And so, you know, during those flooding events, or even non-flooding events, just heavy rain events where things can find their way into the collection system, you're always going to put more stress and more pressure on your infrastructure, on your lift stations, on your treatment plant, and you're gonna increase your costs as a result. And that's primarily where you see those. Now, luckily, we don't, in Pacific City, have combined sewers. I imagine if we had combined sewers, well, we'd have combined sewer overflows, and when that water comes in and combines into that combined sewer, the CSOs, the combined sewer overflows, well, those usually go into a river somewhere. You know, the city of Portland is still trying to get all their combined sewers, their sewers separated, so they don't discharge so much raw sewage into the Willamette River during storm events. In a previous life, I managed the public water system for the city of Astoria. City of Astoria had to apply with the state revolving loan fund to separate out their sewers because 20 years ago, when it rained hard in Astoria, and we all know that never happens, that you were discharging raw sewer into the Columbia River all up and down the waterfront during those events. So the good news is we don't have the combined sewer system, so these don't lead to pollution events, but on the other hand, it means that we have to deal with it and treat it all. And that's the trade-off. And like I say, that costs money and increases maintenance costs. Good questions. Anybody else have anything else at all? No? Gary?
BLM property and immunity and all that. What crystal ball do you have on what might happen?
Well, we got plenty of time, so I'm going off topic a little bit. That is a current event with us. As you may have read, thanks, guys. As you may have read in the PC Sun recently, that those trails have now been closed. We believe it's a temporary closure. I just signed through SDAO a petition to support legislative action to solve this problem. And I believe that that will be forthcoming. This is an important issue. Oregon is, you know, people that love Oregon and live in Oregon, they don't want to have pathways to recreational areas closed. I mean, that's what makes Oregon so great, right? You know, what we did under the current circumstances and at the advice of folks like our insurance carrier and stuff, this was done as a short-term stopgap measure just to protect the authority until new legislation does come out, and I believe it's going to come out soon. There's Oregon League of Cities and Oregon League of Counties. They're already pushing the state real hard to solve this problem, and I think that how it's going to be solved is the legislature is going to classify things like walking or jogging or walking your dog as recreational activities. So and once they do, then they can't say that, well, I was just on my way to the recreational area, and the only reason I'm on this trail is not to recreate, it's to get to a place I want to recreate. Well, that was kind of the crux of the lawsuit and how this all came about down in Newport, where this all got started. And but I think the legislature is going to fix this problem. They're under too much pressure to do so. And as soon as this problem is fixed, those trail systems will be back open and ready for business. So that's my crystal ball. All right. Anybody else? Well, thank you, everyone, for coming.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
Thank you, John.
And if you guys know where to find me, if you ever need anything, you ever have any questions, just reach out. All right?
And the master plan will be at the library as well as...
We have copies at the library. We have electronic copies on our webpage. And as I say, we've got paper copies here as well. And I would invite everybody to help themselves. Keep in mind that there are two different ones in here. One's water and the other one says wastewater. All right? Mm-hmm. So, all right. Well, thank you so much, everybody.
Good job, Don.
Oh, thank you.